Since 1889, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service has been a trusted name in the Richland Center area, providing compassionate care and support for families during difficult times. For assistance, call 608-647-4808. Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, trusted by the community for over 135 years.
Until we meet again.
This is Phil Nee, and I hope all of your trails are happy. And shall we talk again later with some community conversation next hour on WRCO-FM in Richland Center. News at 9 is sponsored by Pamela's Fine Jewelry, a full-service jewelry store featuring a wide variety of styles, and the Phoenix Center Family Fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. Washington, D.C. this morning is teeming with red hats.
So why are you here today?
To see President Trump before he gets inaugurated as president. Greatest American comeback in American history.
As the clock ticks down to Donald Trump's second inauguration, President Biden has issued numerous preemptive pardons, including one for Dr. Anthony Fauci and one for former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Mark Milley, who called Donald Trump a fascist. Also pardoned members of the House Select Committee on the January 6th Capitol riot. Now, last night, the president-elect promised to release many of those who were convicted of taking part in the riot, telling his supporters,
"Tomorrow, everybody in this very large arena will be very happy with my decision on the J6 hostages."
The swearing-in will be held inside the Capitol Rotunda because of the cold weather. This is ABC News. Weeks. TikTok back up and running again after an outage on Sunday, the platform turning the service back on after President-elect Trump promised a pause and the ban put in place over security concerns. Bird flu confirmed at a poultry processing facility in Georgia. Officials there say food at supermarkets safe. The college football season comes to an end tonight. Ohio State and Notre Dame surviving the first ever 12-team college football playoff to face in the championship game. ABC's Will Reeves.
OSU enters the game with one goal, to capture its first title in a decade. Buckeyes quarterback Will Howard says the team's prepared for a fight.
It's going to be a war, and it's not going to be given to us. We're going to have to go earn it out there.
Notre Dame needs their dominant defense to slow down OSU's high-powered offense if they have any chance of winning their 12th title in program history and first since 1988.
In the NFL, the AFC and NFC championship games are set. The Chiefs will host the Bills, and the Eagles take on the Commanders. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Good morning, this is Pamela at Pamela's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Spring Green. Our hours through Valentine's Day will be Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, 10 to 5, and Saturday, 10 to 3. All garnet jewelry is on sale. Save 20% on your January birthstones. Also, a great gem color for a Valentine's gift for your sweetheart at Pamela's in beautiful downtown Spring Green.
The best place to catch a Friday night fish dinner is the Phoenix Center. Dine in or carry out delicious deep-fried or baked fish. Fish is served from 4 to 8 p.m. Fridays only. The Phoenix Center serves food and fun every day. The pizza is out of this world, and after a great meal, make it an even better night with a game of bowling. The Phoenix Center is family fun at its best, open at 11 a.m. Monday through Sunday. The Phoenix Center, this area's go-to spot for good times and great food.
Your WRCO Hometown Weather Watch is brought to you by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765 and find out how you can buy a house without needing 20% down.
Bitter cold today, a high of 1 degree. For tonight, a few clouds and dangerously cold. Lows of 16 below zero with west and northwest winds 5 to 12 miles per hour and a high of zero on Tuesday. A cold weather advisory has been issued through late this evening, then an extreme cold warning from midnight until 9 Tuesday morning for dangerous wind chills of 20 to 35 below zero.
What if there were a way to be more efficient with less effort, to achieve peak performance with less energy? Well, thanks to Carrier GreenSpeed Intelligence, what if is now what is. A home comfort system with GreenSpeed Intelligence is smarter than your average system. It can run longer at lower speeds to maximize your comfort and your home's energy efficiency. It understands your home and how you live in it. How cool is that? GreenSpeed Intelligence, available only from Carrier. Carrier, turn to the experts.
See Ash Creek Plumbing, Heating, and Electric.
Our personal service includes savings. Hi, this is Julie at State Farm. We're always looking for ways to bring you more value and convenience. That includes opportunities to save. For example, a savings may be available to those who choose to bundle a State Farm auto policy with a homeowner's policy. Lower premiums may apply if you have a new home or an older home with completely updated utility systems. Let's talk about the homeowner's insurance choices that make sense for you today. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When you play, you don't want to be on the bench. But when you visit the Shoebox in Black Earth, that's exactly where you'll be, on the bench, taking advantage of service like it ought to be. Their experts measure both your feet, find the right style, and provide the comfort every customer wants, just like owner Steve Schmidt will tell you.
At the Shoebox, we go by the cardinal rule, offering service like it ought to be.
Head for the bench today at the Midwest's largest shoe store, the Shoebox on Highway 14 in Black Earth.
Burnham Lumber Company of Rui wishes you and your family a happy new year, and they would like to remind you that it's not too late to sign up for your winter project. Burnham's has crews willing to work through the winter and an auger that will dig through the frozen ground. You get the usual high-quality Burnham service and workmanship at a reduced price when you build in the winter. Keep your animals, equipment, and feed protected this winter in a Burnham building. Call today for a free quote. That's Burnham Lumber of Rui, wishing you and your family good health, happiness, and prosperity in 2025.
Good morning and welcome to our morning show get-together today on WRCO Radio. I'm Phil Ney, and we began a new week with lots more subjects and some great guests in the studio. And today we welcome back a couple of gentlemen who have been on a regular basis here in the past, but we have Senator Howard Markline here representing the 17th Senate District now, and Representative Tony Kurtz, who's representing Wisconsin's 41st Assembly District. So it's been a while, gentlemen. Good morning.
Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Phil.
Good to have you in here. Tony, the last time we had you on, you were on the campaign trail, and I'm guessing you're glad that that is over with again.
I'm glad, and I'm sure all your listeners are glad that it's all over. So, but yes, our district changed. It used to be the 50th, and now it's the 41st, and it includes all of Richland County. So, no, I'm very, very proud to be here, and very proud to represent the wonderful folks here.
We had your opponent on, Julia Henley, at the same time as well. But I want to commend you both, because I think you both ran a campaign where you weren't slinging mud or anything.
No, and I appreciate that, first of all. Thanks. And once again, Julia, we're going to meet. We've talked a couple times, and I know we're going to get together and have lunch and just kind of talk about some things.
It's interesting because we also saw you recently in a picture with Sarah Kieski, who's a Democratic representative, and imagine that. These two are at the same event, and they're actually getting along.
Yep, so. We were at the Weston School District. Yeah. We were invited to the school board meeting there, and yes, I mean, I know it's shocking that I actually had meetings with Sarah and another Democrat rep this past week in Madison, and don't let that get out that we actually have meetings with our colleagues on the other side. So,
and Howard, you're representing a completely different area now, aren't you?
I am. The 17th Senate District is still the district that I represent, but the map's changed, obviously. So, I do not represent Richland County or Sauk County anymore, and so I picked up Crawford County and pick up part of Dane County. So it's that part of the eastern part of the district, and of course the western part, Crawford County, are new. So I've been trying to spend quite a bit of time in those communities, get to know people there.
You have just a sliver, don't you, in like the Bear Valley area, or am I mistaken?
Do not.
No, you don't.
No.
Okay.
No, I have nothing, no part of Sauk County and no part of Richland County.
Okay.
So, yeah. So actually, I had to move across the river to be in my district.
Oh, you did?
I did, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Interesting. So, yeah, we're all kind of getting used to that now. So you're meeting some new folks.
I am, yes.
Okay. Yep. And so far it's gone all right?
Yeah. It's I spent Crawford County is close to here, and I've been spending a lot of time, in Pershing, Seneca, and a lot of those smaller communities, Wazika, and so good to be over there. And then also spending time in the Mount Horbs, Oregon, in some of those areas. So what's interesting with my new district is, like in Oregon, they have gated communities. And, you know, it's a little bit different from Blue River, I can tell you that. You know what I mean? On nice golf courses and all that. So
the gate might be a cattle gate.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm used to gates, you know, and, but not those kinds of gated communities. So it's just a different. Yeah, it's different. You know, there's no doubt, about that.
What's the? I mean, obviously, some of the issues and some of the concerns are the same, though, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, you know, yes and no. I mean, like in rural EMS is a big concern out here. Rural fire departments. I don't know that it's as big an issue or broadband. If you live in Oregon, I don't think it's an issue. Mm-mm. You know, they've got great broadband, and so, you know, some of the issues are more. There's a difference. There's a difference between the western part of my district and the, and just in terms of local issues and things that concern local, you know, local people.
What's the status of broadband? Any new updates on that or not?
Well, I had a meeting last week with one of the organizations that represent the telephone communications people that put a lot of the fiber in the ground. And there is still a lot of money in the pipeline from the federal government, over $1 billion of BEAD funding. They're in the midst of formulating the applications for those projects, which are supposed to be allocated, I guess, in 2025. They estimate that if the money is sent out in 2025, or the projects are approved in 2025, that some of this stuff won't get done until 2030. So it's going to be a long process. They have capacity issues. They're worried that with all this money coming in, that how they're going to get the work done and stuff. So anyway, that's, you know, that's a concern. Also, the Public Service Commission has been raising some issues that causes them to pause, and some of it has to do with limits on pricing, and where you're locked in for 10 years, okay? And for a lot of these companies, they're like, you know, they're not sure they can do that. They may not apply for the money, because if they can't, there's no guarantee they can raise the rates, they're not going to even apply for the money.
Mm-hmm. What have you heard, Tony?
No, very similar to what Senator Markline said. I mean, if you look, I mean, even today, coming down from, you know, beautiful Waniwak on 80, you know, you see some crews out there trying to put, you know, obviously they're not doing it right now because the ground's frozen. But to Howard's point, what does concern me is some of our smaller providers don't want to go through some of the hassle and the requirements that this federal money is going to have. You know, the big ones like Spectrum, and which I've seen signs around here, you know, they can handle that extra, I don't want to say paperwork, but extra bureaucracy to get to us, whereas some of our smaller providers, they may not apply for this federal money. And so hopefully, you know, with the new administration that's coming in, maybe they'll roll back some of those, in my opinion, kind of burdensome requirements, and kind of push out our smaller guys. And so hopefully they're going to reconsider that, and they'll be available for that money. But it's a long-term process. There is a lot of money out there, what providers are telling me too. Once again, they're kind of worried about, you know, we've got all this work still. You know, don't kind of flood the market with more money. Let us do it. Over time. And so, because if you do flood it, like Howard's talked about before, all you're going to do is escalate the cost, and we don't get any more broadband in the ground. And that's the goal at the end of the day, get everybody, you know, to high-speed internet.
Absolutely. For safety purposes, but also jobs. Yes. Depend on it and everything, right?
You know, it's interesting. And we can talk about it a little bit later, but it is amazing how more and more people are working from home. And having that high-speed internet enables them to do that. I mean, you saw that obviously during the pandemic, but as more and more opportunity, especially here in Richland County, you're getting a lot more people that have the ability to work from home. And really, you know what? They're not necessarily doing jobs in Madison. They could be working for a company in Denver, Colorado, but they're doing it right here in Richland County. But that, like you said, to your point, that high-speed internet enables them to do that.
I know that you met recently with some students, too. You've talked to them. Do they do some questions and answers, and what are some of the questions that they usually come up with?
Students, they have a lot of questions about kind of what we do in the legislature. They're kind of fascinated about the process, you know, how many reps, you know, what do you do, how do you pass a bill, but also just, you know, opportunities moving forward. You know, what does the opportunity look for them? And what I always tell people is, and we can talk a moment here about something else that Department of Administration just came out with, a population study for the state of Wisconsin, but, you know, what I tell young people is the sky's the limit. I mean, if you really look at job opportunities, you know, in healthcare and manufacturing, those people that are really energized to learn and to go out and work, I can't stress enough that the sky's the limit as far as workforce, because we need people in the workforce. And if you are innovative, you're dedicated, you're going to show up on time, you're willing to learn, you are going to have a bright future in this state.
Absolutely. And get promoted fast, too.
Absolutely.
Just show up.
Yes. That's
the main thing. So we've had several administrators in here recently with the school situation. Lots of referendums coming up, Howard. That has not changed. Anything that you can foresee coming up in the near future? Any changes, the per pupil funding and all those kind of things that are concerned?
Well, I wish I could give you a definitive answer, but I can't. There's a lawsuit before the state Supreme Court right now regarding the veto of the last budget, which would increase the per pupil funding $325 a year for 400 years. Okay, and it was a creative, very, very creative veto that the governor did to play around with some digits, and that's how we got to 400 years. So that's before the Supreme Court. So, you know, until and our attorneys have said the fiscal bureau and the legislative reference bureau have told us, I don't see how you can do a budget till some of these court cases are resolved. So, I wish I could be more definitive, but right now you've got that court case, and there's a couple of other court cases that are going through the court system right now. So, I'm not sure if I can give a real good answer on what you know, what the outcome is going to be.
How long do those court cases typically take then, or does it vary?
It varies. I mean, I would hope that they would, you know, rule within the next 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm. And Tony, certainly you've got a lot of small schools in your district too that are facing the same concerns.
No, and you and I talked about this before the election about some things. But one thing I do want to talk about that is something that I don't hear us talking a lot about. I just referenced the Department of Administrative. So they just came out with a study about, and it's called State and County Population Projections Between 2020 and 2050. So basically what they're saying is between now and 2050, the state of Wisconsin is going to lose about 200,000 people. So let's put that in perspective. When I talk about things like schools and higher education, when I say declining enrollment does not mean people are moving out. Okay, somebody confused the thought I was saying people are moving out of the state, and that's one of the reasons. It's not, when I say declining enrollment, it's not people moving out. It's we just don't have the birth rates like we used to have. And so what I mean by that is, so in the 60s and 70s, the birth rate was basically 25 babies for every 1,000 persons every year. That birth rate now is about 10 to 11, depending on what study you look at. So 10 to 11 babies for every 1,000 people per year. So do you see the difference? And so what my point to you is, over the last 20 years, the state of Wisconsin, for K-12 students, we have lost roughly 38,000 students. And that, if you think about it, that tracks with our declining birth rates. And as far as some of the things we need to talk about, particularly in rural areas, is the number of schools that we have and the students that are attending those schools. Because if you historically, if you look at them, they're all going down. It's not going down because people are moving. It's just we don't have the birth rates to support some of those systems. And if you think about it, if any of your listeners right now, if you think about when you grew up, especially if you grew up in beautiful Richland County, think about the neighbors that you had around you, how many kids those neighbors had, how many your family had, and now think about that today. The family size is just not anywhere near the size it was a couple years ago. So one thing I think we need to have a strong conversation about is how is that affecting our school systems? Well, it is, because you're not having those kids in the school like we once had. If you take 38,000 students, like I just sent, I mentioned over the last 20 years, dollar-wise, that's like $500 million that has taken out. Because we as a state, we pay per pupil. You have less students, that's less money you're getting. So that needs to be part of the conversation about how is this going to transfer and cause things later on in life. Because it's not going to get any better. You know, I don't think, you know, somebody's going to snap their finger and the birth rates are automatically going to increase. And once again, if you read the study, they're actually going to get worse.
Huh. A lot of proud communities, though, that don't want their school to close.
And I'm not submitting that at all. You know, it's interesting. So Howard and I have a deep respect for the Fiscal Bureau, and there's a gentleman there by the name of Bob Blang. Bob's been there for probably, 50 years, and he's just like a walking encyclopedia. And I met Bob a couple weeks ago and to talk about this very issue. I said, when was the last time schools in the state actually consolidated? And, of course, in his thinking, you can bring it. Believe it or not, in the 1950s, the state of Wisconsin had over 6,000 school districts.
Districts. Wow.
Because the districts back then, so many of them went up to eighth grade.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So then back in the late 50s, early 60s, the state said, okay, K, you know, through eight, you need to be with a graduating program to have a K-12. So that's where in the late 50s, early 60s, you had a lot of consolidation. And so now, obviously, we have 421 school districts. So I'm not submitting that schools need to close. I'm not saying that at all. But we do need to look at how can we reduce some of that overhead. You know, if you got some school districts, and to be very fair, you've got some that have 260 kids. You have another one that might be 10 miles away that has 311 kids. How can those two schools, you know, join forces? How can somehow they collaborate and work together on a thing? And you're already seeing that. I mean, let's be honest, Phil. You're seeing that with a lot of sports, things like that. I think we need to continue to, I don't know if we as a state, we need to incentivize that, but we got to come up with some idea where we start being a little bit more smart about how we're managing our assets and for in the bottom line, it is for our students, because the smaller the school districts get, obviously, unfortunately, some of the services they can provide are not the same.
Right. But it's still the costs are there and going up, Howard, because a lot of times maybe you need more aides in classrooms and things like that than you used to and whatnot. So it's certainly the cost of education is not going down.
Yeah. You know, and that's, I mean, the challenge that we have right now, I think, in our local schools is, I could characterize by, you know, two things. Tony mentioned declining enrollment, which is a big, big, big issue in virtually every one of my school districts. The other thing is inflation. And over the last few years, I mean, inflation has hit our local school districts in a big way. And, you know, the challenge that they have is that, you know, if you lose three students, and I'll make up numbers here. Let's say that's $35,000, $36,000 reduction in your budget. Where do you cut? Mm-hmm. Excuse me. You know, you have the same busing costs. You have the same heat, light, staff. It's tough to cut costs.
If you lose four or five students, pretty much that would pay a staff member.
Well, and the thing is that you don't lose them all like in one grade. It's, you added two in this grade and lost two in another, and so managing it is incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the goals for the future, looking at that in terms of when those lawsuits go by the wayside and things like that?
Well, we have to you know, we're going to wait and see. I guess I haven't, we haven't gotten real heavy into the school budget yet, but we'll be doing that very shortly.
The budget process, though, is getting underway now that you're back in session. You've got a new year in the legislature, and are things starting there, progressing?
Yeah, I would say it's starting kind of slowly. You know, we're I've been asked many times in the last few weeks about the budget process, and at this point, I'm not sure what it's going to look like.
What about you, Tony?
Well, no, I mean, right now it's all about what I kind of joked with my wife the other day. It's all about reading and meetings, because obviously people do want to meet on the budget on whatever what area it's important to them and for their groups. And then the other thing is just all the reading. Like this weekend, we just got our fiscal papers, and the first couple of ones are about tax revenues and things like that. And so it's just diving into the numbers to see what we truly have as a state. And I do want to caution people. Everybody sees that we have a $4 billion surplus, and we do. But what I want to emphasize to people is that's one-time money. And so what I mean by that is, everybody, all your listeners, you have to think about when we had horrible COVID, you know, the federal government issued a lot of stimulus checks. Every municipality got checks. You know, school districts got money. You know, the state got money. And, you know, there's an estimate that that was roughly $60 billion of federal money that came to the state of Wisconsin. And as I read the papers this weekend, and I know nobody can see these, but it just looks at, like, between sales tax revenue increases and income tax revenue increases, during those years of COVID were more than double what our normal ones. So, for instance, the 2018-2019 year, we had sales tax revenue of about 4.5%. 2019 to 2020, it was 2.5%. 2020 to 2021, 9.2%. And then it continued on to 9.5 the next year. So my point is, this $4 billion is all the money from the sales revenue that people basically spent with a lot of COVID money. And so as a state, we got to be very cautious about putting $4 billion of new programs, because that will add to our base. We don't want to do something like that. We just got to be careful that we don't have a massive structural deficit. So that's I just caution people on that, because I've heard over and over, oh, you got $4 billion, you can do this and that. Not so fast. You know, we just have to be a little careful, knowing that it's one-time money.
Right. Yeah, I think they hold that over your head a little bit, hearing that number all the time and thinking.
Well, it's no different, Phil. So let's say somebody got a $4,000 stimulus check, and they go out and they buy a brand new car, expecting that $4,000 is going to come every quarter or everybody's not getting another stimulus check over the course of the last year. It's just like, you know, Richland County got money from the COVID money. You know, they're not getting another influx of that money. And so we just have to be careful about what we do with that money and just be smart and not add another $4 billion onto our base budget moving forward. It'd be pretty irresponsible.
Indeed. Howard, anything else you want to add there?
To follow up on what Tony said, you know, there's three numbers that I always cite with people, and 3.2%, 2.9%, and 1.7%. 3.2, 2.9, 1.7. 3.2% is the expected revenue growth, revenue being taxes, to the state of Wisconsin in the year we're in right now. Next year, the first year of the next biennium, they're expecting it to grow by 2.9%. The following year by 1.7%. So you see the trajectory we're on. It's not for growing revenues in the state. It's moderating. And so just to, you know, emphasize what Tony said, you know, we got to be, you know, there's people that want to blow every penny of that $4 billion and on new projects and all that stuff. Well, if we look out into the future, the revenue doesn't appear to be coming in strongly over the next several years.
Interesting. We'll take a break and come back with more in a moment. Senator Howard Markline and Representative Tony Kurtz on our morning show today.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Lynette from the Prescription Center. We want to thank all of our longtime friends who have put their trust in us to manage their family's health. We want to thank our increasing number of new friends who have learned just how special we treat our friends. We do realize you can go anywhere or use mail order. We want you to choose us every day. We know copays are the same for any pharmacy in town. However, we feel we provide a superior value for your dollars. If you find our prices higher, we will match prices for all medications. We check to see if any of your prescriptions have dollar off coupons from the manufacturer. These coupons actually put money back in your pocket. If your current pharmacy does not do this, give us a call. We know your time is valuable. When you call ahead, your prescriptions are ready when you stop. I guarantee you will never wait in our drive-thru. Okay, we do not have a drive-thru. The Family Prescription Center, where you and your family always come first.
My life is always on, every single day. And the electricity my co-op provides is more essential to it than ever before. It allows me to shop online while I'm watching TV and keeps my mobile phone charged so I can return the 10 missed calls from my mother. I depend on the electricity from my co-op to power my life and keep me connected every single day. Learn more about the power of your co-op membership at togetherwesave.com.
Richland Electric is your Touchstone Energy Cooperative, your source for power and information.
Coach Jamie Johnson here. How are your New Year's resolutions or goals going? Are you struggling? Have you given up already? Maybe you didn't even know where to start or didn't even start. I would love to chat with you about a systematic, structured, supported health plan that works. I say with our program, the plan works if you work the plan. Contact me today, Jamie Johnson, through Facebook, or you can call me at 608-604-7751. Mention the radio ad and receive a scholarship upon the order.
No need to travel for exceptional care. At Gunderson Boscobel, we collaborate with other providers and healthcare systems to deliver safe, effective treatment plans close to home. Whether you need specialized IV medications such as chemotherapy or antibiotic therapy, port or PICC maintenance, or blood product transfusions, we make it easier to get the personalized care you need. Gunderson Boscobel, bringing love plus medicine and outpatient nursing services to you.
Spice up your life at Whitaker's Market. As a cook, the bulk food section is one of my favorite departments in the store. In addition to the nuts and dried fruit, the flowers and sweeteners, we have over 65 dried herbs and spices packaged in convenient 8-ounce containers and reasonably priced for you to take home and make those delicious meals that your family loves to eat. See you soon. Whitaker's Market, 1001 Water Avenue, Hillsboro.
The Wisconsin Supper Club tradition has found new life at Kickapoo Creekside. From mouth-watering steaks and fresh seafood to a large salad bar and perfectly crafted old fashions, Kickapoo Creekside offers a truly exceptional dining experience. Choose from the menu or indulge in the chef's daily special. Dine inside or enjoy your meal outside in the fresh air. Visit Kickapoo Creekside at 827 West Kickapoo Street in Reedstown. Open Wednesdays through Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays starting at 11. Come and taste the tradition.
Hey, that's one nice new bike, Josie.
Yeah, birthday present. Rides really smooth, too. Oh, and I see you finally got a new helmet.
I did. Bought it cheap online.
Love those side wings.
Hey, are you hungry?
Yeah, I'm starving. And need some water, too.
Okay, follow me. We'll turn off here.
I'm right behind you.
Hey, watch the cars. They can be crazy.
Called 911. They should be here soon.
Was this young man hit by a car?
Yes, and I'm concerned because his helmet is smashed and cracked open.
It's a brand new helmet.
It's probably a fake.
Please help him.
Fakes cause real harm. You're smart. Buy smart.
Go for real.
Brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
Welcome back to our morning show. Tony Kurtz, Howard Markline, our guest today on WRCO Radio as we begin a new year on our morning show get-togethers today. Inauguration Day today, top of the ticket. How does that change things, or how does that work for you, Tony, as you look at it, Howard?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't affect my day-to-day. I guess I'm going to be out meeting with constituents, and I got meetings tonight, so... I think it probably depends on your political leanings. I think there's people that are incredibly excited, a new day and some optimism, and there's some people that are very depressed, you know. So, you know, I don't know that I can make any general assessment of how everybody's feeling and stuff. I think there's been some frustration over some of the policies of the last administration, and I think that, some of the people I talk about are just, hope that, we get back to, I guess, some more, I don't know, I call them kind of common sense issues and things that matter to families.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing that, Tony, as well?
No, I would agree with that. I mean, but yeah, obviously in our day-to-day, as far as the budget process, nothing's going to really change, keep driving on our focus. But I do think, I do agree with Howard. I think, there's going to be some people that are going to be elated, and there's going to be some people that are very, very upset. But I think it is time to turn the page and move on to the next administration.
Right. As I always say, you got to worry about your own community first,
yep,
right?
And absolutely.
Then, and kind of move on from there. But you have a Democratic governor, too, that once in a while you lock horns with as well, Howard.
Oh, yeah. And it's, today's been a good day. I haven't been sued so far today. And I say that kind of facetiously here, but, there's a number of lawsuits going on between the administration and the legislature, which isn't good. It's just not good as far as, communication and getting along and all that. So, we talked about the 400-year veto that he did on schools, but there's a couple other lawsuits that are going on. And like I said, it's just not a good look. I think the public hates that. It's not fun for us to be talking about litigation and stuff instead of working on policies that, hopefully we could agree on. So, like with the Knowles Nelson program. I guess it's very concerned. I think the Supreme Court, that ruling on that one may have killed that program, which was a really good program, worked well over multiple administrations, Democrat, Republican. And so, there's unfortunately, there's always consequences to actions like that. So, I wish the relationship was better between the administration and the legislature.
Yeah. Those of us on the outside and the public kind of think, why can't we all get along, Tony?
Well, and I think you and I have talked about this before. It's just, unfortunately, I think some in the media, not all, but some in the media truly focus on those things that we disagree on. And let's be honest, there are things we disagree on with Governor Evers. But if I go back, so I came in the same year Governor Evers came in. So all I know is split government. And I look back at, we did three budgets. They were crafted by Republicans, and guess what? He signed them. I mean, yeah, he did some partial vetoes here and there, but at the end of the day, he did sign those. Last session, we did some historical stuff with, shared revenue. We did some stuff for the city of Milwaukee and the Brewers deal. And just over and over, there's some pretty historical things that have gotten done that, unfortunately, people don't tend to go back and say, hey, you know what, they did get those type of things done. And the same thing, the budget process is, we're going to huff and puff, the governor's going to huff and puff, everybody's going to be say, oh, why can't you guys get along? At the end of the day, we will get something done. It's just a matter of when, But one thing I do want to caution the people is one thing that is so great about our state is the fact that, one, we have to balance the budget. So that's one of the first things. The next thing is, if we don't get a budget done on the 1st of July, it's not the end of the world. And what I mean by that is all we do is continue on with our old budget. That's the beauty about our system in their state. Unlike the federal government doesn't do a budget. You're right. Things close. People don't get their paychecks. They're not going to be able to go to get services. But unlike the benefit of ours is if we don't get a budget on July 1st, okay, not the end of the world. The budget still continues from the old budget, and we keep working on until we can find some common ground to get a good budget for the state.
Yeah, a lot of times you'll hear, you know, we'll read something even in our news and it'll be like a bill. And from the outside, it's like, well, that should be a no-brainer. I mean, one way or the other. But a lot of times there are other things attached to it, too.
Right? And I think that's where people don't kind of like, for instance, last session we had the PFAS bill. Mm-hmm. All right. And obviously PFAS is a huge concern in different parts of the state. We put $125 million in the budget. A bill got ran. Unfortunately, the governor vetoed that bill. And it was just basically, and it wasn't that we shouldn't do something to help with PFAS. It was the fine print. And in that case, you know, in my humble opinion, if the governor got his way, people that had nothing to do with PFAS. So right now, you know, let's say a septic tank guy or somebody with a sludge, you know, they can put that sludge out into a field. Well, maybe that sludge had PFAS in it. Now that farmer could be held accountable for that PFAS in his field. Well, that farmer shouldn't be held accountable. And so those are the fine details that, in my humble opinion, you know, we need to make sure we protect. Yeah, do we need to do something with PFAS? Yes, we do. But what's, you know, there's that gray area that people tend to maybe not read the full details about.
Mm-hmm. And in concerning PFAS, too, as Tony mentioned, you know, a farmer could be liable. That kind of makes it down the road. Maybe they're not going to want people to spread that on their fields and things like that then.
Yeah, and that uncertainty is, that's a big concern, you know. And, again, you know, I voted for the bill. So, you know, and the bill that we passed had protections in there for people that had no idea that their property had this stuff on it, okay? Which is, there's parts of our state up in northeast Wisconsin especially, I think, where the DNR approved the spreading of this on their fields, so on your field. So, you know, can you imagine that, you know, potentially the DNR could file a lawsuit against you for having PFAS on your land that they authorized to spread on your land, you know? And that was the concern that we had, and that's why we had that protection in the bill, and I think it was reasonable, and I sure I hope we can. We got, you know, we made what I think is a significant commitment. $125 million, nothing to sneeze at, and in the budget last year. So we're serious about addressing this problem, but at the same time, you know, we wanted some protections for innocent property owners that had no idea that they even had PFAS on their land.
And we're, you know, it's interesting. I don't mean to interrupt, Phil, but, you know, this isn't like the end of the story. So the other day, literally this last week, I had some folks in from UW talking about, remember we've talked about hemp before?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have some studies. And matter of fact, probably week after next, I'm going to go to the campus, because up at U of Stevens Point, they've been doing some studies with hemp and how hemp can actually clean up the soil from PFAS. One thing about hemp, you know, hemp can actually grow up to like 12 feet tall. Well, the roots go down just as tall as the plant, so they can go down to 12 feet. And hemp does a great job of actually cleaning the soil. And the initial studies are that it's actually getting the PFAS from out of the ground. And if that could, I mean, if we can further develop that, that could be pretty significant.
The plant wouldn't be usable, though, right?
No, the plant wouldn't be usable, and obviously you'd have to destroy the plant. But the point is, you could get that PFAS out of the ground using that plant.
A natural filtration system.
Yes, absolutely.
In other words,
yep.
I know we were talking off the air, Howard, before we went on about local fire departments too, and some possible regulations that were proposed there that are of concern.
Yeah. So this all came out of Washington, D.C., which is a concern in and of itself. But so OSHA submitted a proposed rule that our local fire departments are extremely opposed to, and it has to do with a lot of mandatory requirements, training requirements, and all that. The standard that they is 250 pages long, and our local, I have over 60 volunteer fire departments in my Senate district. They are all opposed to this, and so last week I submitted a letter to OSHA opposing this regulation on my behalf, but also on behalf of all the fire departments that I represent. So The public comment ended last Friday, so there's no opportunity anymore to weigh in on that. But I know that a lot of my fire departments did weigh in on it. And again, you know, this strikes me as being a rule drafted in Washington, D.C. that may be perfectly reasonable for New York City and Detroit and Milwaukee, but, you know, Wazika? No, it's just not, it just doesn't apply to. So hopefully OSHA is going to hear a lot from our rural fire departments and legislators, and hopefully they're going to modify this rule.
So some of the rules, is it for equipment or is it for people like training for the firefighters? Or
it's equipment, operating training, mandatory written plans. A lot of it is paperwork, and you know, it just again, it's overhead. I mean, our volunteer fire departments, they're volunteer. They do this at the end of the day. They're at night or their fire meetings and stuff, so they don't need to be spending a whole lot of time on paperwork that doesn't do any good.
Indeed.
No, we heard the same thing. And for some of your listeners, OSHA is the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Basically, they do all the workplace safety requirements. So, you know, Rockwell, you know, Schreiber, you know, they all have to comply with OSHA standards. To Howard's point, they would force these OSHA standards basically on our local fire departments. And so, you know, everything from fall protection to different PPEs, and to his point, it would just be a real burden on their. And unfortunately, we have a hard enough time getting firefighters and EMS providers and those that volunteer and do great things for our community. This would just put another undue burden on them.
And again, equipment. Is a huge
absolutely.
Cost.
Yes.
And
yep.
Raising money.
The biggest driver.
Like yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Solar energy, too. I think that's certainly a big thing in your area, your new area, Howard.
Yeah. And this was something that I heard a lot about over the last several months, last several years, and in southwest Wisconsin. And the concern is that these large wind and solar projects that are going in, there is no opportunity for local control, local input for our town boards, for example. And so, which is, you know, it's kind of frustrating. And when this framework was set up, I think back in 2007, I don't know that we envisioned the kinds of massive solar farms and wind farms that we have now. And, you know, I guess I've heard enough from my constituents that I drafted a bill along with Representative Travis Tranel to restore local control over that process so that if there was a, you know, 2,000-acre solar farm someplace at that township, would have the opportunity to either approve or reject it before the Public Service Commission makes their decision. And because right now that decision is made solely by the 3-member Public Service Commission. And they're unelected and they have incredible influence over what happens in rural communities. So we had a listening session last Friday in Belmont, and we had overwhelming support from the people that showed up at that listening session on this bill.
How does that work then? The wind turbines are installed. The landowners sell the land, or do they rent the land for a certain amount of years, or how does that work?
It's a lease. They're paid X number of dollars per year per turbine. And I think the same thing applies to the solar panels.
Okay. Do you have a lot in your area, Tony, or not?
We're getting more and more. I know up in the Linden Station area, there's a proposed about a 3,000-acre solar project. If anybody's been through Elroy over the last several years, in Elroy, just on the south side of Elroy, right on the side of a really some kind of hilly terrain, they have a solar array, about 10-acre solar array. That, to me, was a real good use of land because it's not the best farmland. I am concerned about some of our really beautiful farmland being converted into solar and wind. I mean, as a farmer, it just me personally as a farmer, I see, oh boy, that's some beautiful, beautiful ground. So I would prefer to see it in areas where the ground is not so fertile, I'll put it that way.
property taxes, people are getting set to pay them, and
we're well aware of that.
I'm sure you are.
You know, it's interesting in the state budget. You know, we buy down. So if everybody looks at their tax bill, if you go in there, you know, the first dollar credit and the lottery credit, you know, that's where we as a state actually buy that down. So we have done that over the last several years. This last budget was at $600 million we put in to do that. So, and all that is to try to reduce the property taxes, because trust me, I understand that's a big burden, particularly for those that are on fixed incomes.
Indeed. It isn't, I guess people think sometimes it's because of the school. It isn't always because of the school that they're going up, Howard.
Exactly. You know, I mean, the schools are my biggest part of my bill, but no, there's other components. And I did speak to the tech college boards last week at their annual meeting in Madison, and I wanted to take the opportunity today to talk about buying down the taxes. Back in 2013, we had a surplus, and Dale Koyanga and I came up with the idea to buy down our tech college levies by $406 million per year. Okay, now, why was it 406? We looked at every tech college system in the state, and we wanted to make sure that whatever money we put in affected every district taxpayer equally. Okay, so that we weren't rewarding high spending tech, you know, legislative or tech college districts more than others. So, excuse me. And so we ended up doing that. So that was 10 years ago. So you think about it, $406 million for 10 million for 10 years, that's over $4 billion of tax savings. That, and again, I don't know that people, obviously, you don't see it on your tax bill anyplace, but that was a significant decision we made years ago, and we've been buying down those taxes by $406 million every year for a decade now. That's over $4 billion that has come off people's tax bills.
Yeah, something that I guess we don't see or don't think about.
Right. Because it's not on there.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You're still seeing a little bit on there, but that's more for their
operating costs. Yep. Yeah.
Recently, the unfortunate, the shooting at Abundant Life Christian in Madison, and certainly been hearing some things at the Capitol about that, some groups
we
coming
have,
into
and that, you know, that's incredibly tragic, and I think I can speak for Howard and I, you know, obviously our hearts go out to the victims. What amazes me, and I've said this before on air with you, is the generosity of the communities, not just, you know, in the Dane County, Madison area, but surrounding. I mean, you got Culver's, you got all these other different businesses that are stepping up and doing fundraising to make sure to help with those victims. It's just a testament to our community and how we all rally together.
Indeed.
Agreed. You know, it's you hope we never have another event like that, you know, and so, it's tragic, and again, you hope you never have it again.
Indeed. Some of it comes down to obviously mental illness, and some of it comes down to screen time from what we've heard and things like that.
You know, I had this conversation with a colleague of mine a few weeks ago about, you know, I'm 58 years old, and to your point, you just didn't hear about these things, you know, 30 years ago or 40 years ago. And to your point, Phil, there's something in society that we're missing, that we have all these horrible events. I mean, you know, just what happened down in New Orleans with the guy driving through the crowd. You know, you saw that in Waukesha a couple years ago. It's just the mental health and just the lack of caring for life is something that I don't know what the answer is, but we got to do better, because we've just the sense of lost life and the respect for life, we've lost that way, in my opinion. So.
And you had the incident in New Lisbon.
Oh, absolutely.
Recently.
I mean, you know, three people were killed. You know, I want to give my hats off. I saw the sheriff the other day in Juneau County, and you know, their biggest fear in that was that gentleman, you know, they wanted to be very cautious about how they proceeded because he was armed, he was dangerous, and they were worried that he was going to kill somebody else. And so to capture him without further loss of life, to me, was tremendous, and hats off to the law enforcement people for that, because they did. They took their time, they were patient. I know some of the public were upset because it was taking longer, but there was a reason why they did the way they did, and they were very deliberate, and fortunately nobody else was harmed.
Yeah, and that came from a tip from a resident that saw him and
Absolutely.
Pointed it out.
Yeah, I was shocked. Even, like I said, the sheriff, he said, I couldn't believe he was still, I would think he would have fled, but he stayed in the area, and like I said, fortunately he will be held accountable for his horrific crime.
Yeah, absolutely. Howard, as you head into the new year, do you set goals, things like that, as a senator, and some
yeah.
things that you want
yeah.
to accomplish?
Yeah, get a budget done.
Yeah,
I mean, that's, you
number
know,
one.
I mean, what's it, people ask me, so what kind of bills you want to? I said, just one little bill, the budget. You know, I mean, that's really my priority too. So, and then we deal with an awful lot of constituent issues, people that have trouble dealing with a state agency and, getting a permit, a license, and it's frustrating sometimes, And so, and they don't call us. We're not the first call they make. Usually they've tried to deal with this, on their own, many phone calls and a lot of minutes on hold. So, constituent service is still incredibly important to me. And when people have an issue to call and we can help them out too. And even on federal issues, because a lot of times on federal issues, Tony and I can't help them, but we know who can. And so we can connect them with maybe the appropriate person in one of the federal agencies. I am going to have some listening sessions coming up early February. I've got a listening session in Prairie du Chien on February 3rd, and then one in Fenimore the same day. The Prairie du Chien will be in the morning, and then Fenimore will be in the afternoon.
All right. Tony?
And just to, piggyback on that, I too am going to have some listening sessions on Monday, February 3rd. From 10:30 to 11:30, we're going to be in the beautiful village of Iola, the Village Hall. That day on February 3rd as well, we're going to be here in Richland Center and in Lone Rock. We're just still looking for some locations to do that, because I like to do one also in the evening, and sometimes you just got to be careful because some places you got to rent the building. But anyway, as soon as that comes available, but February 3rd, Viola, Richland Center, and Lone Rock, we just got to figure out some locations for Richland Center and Viola. So.
Thanks for joining us today, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
Howard, you'll be back later this year. I know we're going to kind of see you from time to time. Tony, you'll be back next month.
I am. I'm looking forward to it.
Look forward to that. Very good. Senator Howard Markline and Representative Tony Kurtz on our morning show today. We'll have more coming up tomorrow.
Landowners manage a variety of assets every day. Trees on your property are an asset you shouldn't take for granted. The staff of Meister Log and Lumber has been buying logs and standing timber in southwest Wisconsin since 1936. Meister's professional forest management team can help you make the decisions that will be in the best interest of you and your trees. Give professional timber manager Toby Witkowski a call at Meister Log and Lumber, 608-434-4413.
This month at Quail Run, the flavors are off the charts. Try the Burnt and Dip Burger, a juicy 1/3-pound patty with provolone cheese and mouth-watering burnt and dip, served with chips. This week's special is a taco panini, packed with all the taco goodness you love, served with crispy chips. Don't forget this Saturday soup served all day to warm you up. And mark your calendar for Sunday the 26th, when Quail Run serves their famous broasted chicken. Finish off your meal with Amber's decadent Buckeye cheesecake. She's turned those irresistible peanut butter balls into a cheesecake dream. Quail Run, where every meal is a celebration. Join them at Quail Run for a taste of something special.
Coach Jamie Johnson here. How are your New Year's resolutions or goals going? Are you struggling? Have you given up already? Maybe you didn't even know where to start or didn't even start. I would love to chat with you about a systematic, structured, supported health plan that works. I say with our program, the plan works if you work the plan. Contact me today, Jamie Johnson, through Facebook, or you can call me at 608-604-7751. Mention the radio ad and receive a scholarship upon the order.
Hello, this is Nick Hodge with the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service in Richland Center in Muscadet. Thinking about your loved one's funeral leaves most people feeling a little uneasy, but pre-planning funerals offers great emotional and even financial security for you and your family. With pre-planning, families find comfort in knowing that the funeral reflects what their loved one wanted. It also gives them peace of mind not having to make important decisions at a stressful time.
Working outdoors often results in a great feeling afterwards, the feeling of having achieved something. Whether it's tackling fallen limbs, cutting firewood, or clearing land, Steel has a chainsaw for your next project. Find your Steel at Hillsboro Equipment, like the reliable MS-271 Farm Boss, a high-performance, high-tech chainsaw that's built to work day in and day out. Enjoy the satisfaction of a job well done with a Steel chainsaw from Hillsboro Equipment, Boston Equipment, or Slama's Lawn and Sport, Reedsburg.
Hello, this is Added Touch Floral on Main Street. Let us help make your Valentine's special this year with a beautifully arranged bouquet by Ashley and Samantha. We also have candy bouquets, stuffed animals, a large selection of wines, balloons, and candles. Give us a call at 647-2319 or order directly on our website at addedtouchfloral.com. Don't be that guy who forgot Valentine's Day and order early to enter our $250 giveaway to Open Season, JJ Walsh, or Added Touch Floral. Check our Facebook page. We look forward to making this day special for your Valentine.
Does JJ Walsh Jewelers in downtown Richland Center do more than just gifts? You bet. We do full custom laser engraving on most metal items, custom engraving on knives, ID marking your tools, custom motorcycle parts, belt buckles, metal water bottles, wedding servers, dog tags, turn bracelets, or anything you can think of. Whether it's a gift